Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway Zambia Special. If you're a regular listener, you probably know where Kev and I just got back from our trip to Zambia. It's the second time we've been down to that beautiful part of the world in the last year or two. Not really sure that we noticed anything major different in terms of changes to the country, but obviously we saw a very different part of it this time, didn't we? In the fact we went further north, and we also extended to Mumbwa and into the Kafue National Park. So, firstly, have you recovered from the trip?
Just about. Didn't do very much over the weekend. I have soak us all. Very, very tired.
I think it was a lot of travel. One thing you realise is the roads are not equipped for making progress, are they? Literally, you can spend 12 hours, sometimes I think 17 hours in the car, and you're covering hundreds of kilometres, but not thousands of kilometres. You know, if you did that in the UK, you'd cover, or on the continent, you'd cover thousands of kilometres. But sometimes it can take you an hour to move like 10 to 12 kilometres because the roads are that rutted and that pothole that progress isn't, you're not making progress there. So it's quite treacherous and painful at times. And I know there was a few yelps from the back as you got, smacked your head into the windscreen or the window of the car there.
Yeah, on the Sunday, my left shoulder was really sore because it smacked into that door a few times when we'd literally bumped around a rag doll is right. But yeah, it was interesting what we saw, and we saw some wildlife as well, obviously, as well as the vines. So probably the best thing to do is just begin where we left.
Yeah.
Johannesburg Airport. We flew to Ndola, and we then met Hunter, who's one of the geologists for Galileo and Extract and African Pioneer up in Ndola. So we met him, and off we went to look at a few things. So what did we do first?
Yeah, well, first thing, we actually went up to the core sheds. We looked at the Luansobi cores, and we looked at the Shinganda cores. And we'll try and put some photos of those, or links to photos, in the description of this podcast, and you can have a look at some of the key cores that we pulled out. Then the following day, we head up to Luansobi, didn't we? And we stood, and there's some voice notes. And again, we'll put those voice notes in after this of each part of this journey. And then from there, we headed down, didn't we? We took an internal flight from Ndola to Lusaka. We had a night in Lusaka. And then in the morning, we headed out to Silver King and then to Kikuyu. But that was, obviously we headed to Mumbwa first because it's a long journey, and we had a night in a lodge, didn't we? What did you make of that guest house in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, it was just an off-grid place, wasn't it?
Very odd.
But let's talk about, first of all, Luansobi. We saw the core sheds and the strikes that they'd hit in terms of the copper, and we could see the mineralization and the green weathering of the copper, obviously, now that it's out the ground. So that was really interesting. It was all laid out, the hundreds of meters that were available in Luansobi. And the thing that really struck me about Luansobi, I suppose, when we put all the pieces together, was that, Luansobi is basically on strike with Mopani. It's on strike with Mopani, and that's where the Jubilee sort of big project is, to get rid of all this slag that has 1 to 1.5% copper in it. So this Luansobi is on strike from that, literally only a couple of kilometers away. And it was very interesting to see that there is the potential there for an open pit, which is now being worked on. I think all the different engineers that are required and geologists that are required to work on how that pit will be best used is being worked on. And then the strike, which would then take you to Mopani, is probably conservatively three times the amount of the open pit. Yeah. So yeah, Luansobi has definitely a lot of potential.
Yeah, and then we don't forget the IRH, the Abu Dhabi based International Resource Holdings, that they completed the acquisition of that 51% stake in the Zambia's Mopani copper mine for, it's like $1.1 billion. So as time's moving on, that's probably one thing we should say, is that what have we noticed over the last year since when we're seeing more investment from some of these large, you know, asset on or these large investment funds coming into Zambia to help with some of these assets, you know, to help the likes of the government-backed ZCCM with their projects. You know, as we probably know, First Quantum are obviously also operating in the Canadian miner, also operating up in the northwestern foreland. And you've also got Vedanta Resources, which owns a majority stake in Konkola Copper Mine. So the majors are still there, and obviously Glencore as well. That was the X mine, that the Mopani mine, so that they moved out, and IRH and ZCCM have moved in. So I think that's one thing we would say, is that there's been more investment, hasn't it, from some of these majors since we were last there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the Slag project, obviously, from Jubilee is also there, and that has the potential to create hundreds of thousands of copper tons as well. And, you know, if all of that investment and money is going into that area, then you can't see that Mopani will not be extended to an ore body such as Lewansobi. So, and yeah, that was right next to the DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo. So they said we could walk to the Congo if we wanted, but we chose not to. And it is just a jungle at the minute, because obviously, you know, the reality is that they did drill, and we were searching for the drill holes, and we found the plate, if you like, where some of the drill holes were going in.
Yeah.
And so very interesting. And then going back a day again, when we were at the core sheds, we then looked at the core shed for Shinganda. So this was a bit mind-blowing, really. I mean, there was a huge amount of drilling, but we were literally picking up blocks of copper. So there was some
oxide, wasn't it? There was oxide of about 35 to 40% that literally picked it up. It was really heavy. And when normally cores are obviously cut down the middle for like a center section and by the mill saw, but that one you could see that there was an indentation of where the mill saw had struggled to cut through it, and it had broken the actual saw blade, hadn't it? And it sort of become not embedded in it, but you could see the indentation. So, you know, you're talking rock there in that strike zone that is extremely high grade, and probably, as Hunter said, a geologist's nightmare, didn't he? He summed it up as.
Yeah, it was quite amazing, wasn't it? And then there is another section that they were talking about where there is extremely high grade gold, some copper still, I think, but basically, yeah,
indicators of arsenic as well, which generally is usually a good indicator for the presence of gold, isn't it?
Yeah. And they were talking 5 grams per ton of gold when we were discussing that with them. So, you know, the potential in Shinganda, I think, for a separate gold deposit
I think from what I can gather, Alex and Hunter are going to be walking the site with the mag equipment there, aren't they, to do more analysis of the testing and mag testing of the land around Shinganda in some areas they've identified. So that one that'll be exciting to see.
And yeah, both of those, Shinganda and Lewansobi, are in Galilea. We didn't go to the northwest foreland, because basically we would have just seen a field.
Yeah, there's no drilling going on at the moment, was it? I mean, even though the season hasn't transpired to be that rainy, in fact, that there was quite a lot of crops and there wasn't the crops that they normally have because of the fact that there's been effectively a drought in the country, because rainy season just hasn't materialized. So I believe that the drill bit will be turning in the coming weeks, from what I gather from Hunter. So let's hope we get that quarterly report from the likes of First Quantum, you know, for the African Pioneer projects, etc.
How would you say their confidence level was in terms of those areas?
I think they seem quite confident. I think it's all about proving up the geology now, isn't it? And this redox system and making sure that everything is there. And I think all they need is one of the companies to find, you know, the correct geology, and it sets all of the companies up in the area, you know, Extract and Galileo, for for the future, really.
Yeah, I mean, African Pioneer of 3 is going to be the one that gets the results first, just because of the sheer fact that they're drilling. But there is going to be some work going on the Galileo license, which is by the Angola border, and also the Extract license, which is concurrent but just a bit further up. We know for sure that First Quantum want to drill in the Galileo and the Extract, but right now they're not getting that opportunity. So let's see what happens. So when we went up to Lou and Sobey, what were your thoughts?
Initial thoughts were, wow, this is effectively like, you know, not a mini jungle, but it's a very, very, it's like driving into the bush, isn't it? I think, it's, as we've said before, you're trying to visualize this strike zone. We saw the holes, I think it was hole 13, and you'll be able to listen to us talking from the site on in the audio clips that will be coming up in a minute. And trying to visualize the extension of that strike zone down to Mopani, as you alluded to a minute ago. But what strikes you is that it is actually quite close to surface, isn't it? You know, I think the first strike was something like 20 to 25 meters, the first zone. So it is very close, and it wouldn't need a lot of machinery could be moved in there from the roads. It's very close to infrastructure, and they could probably clear that area, that grassy area or that wooded area out quite quickly and actually start trucking that ore to a nearby processing facility, which presumably would be at Mopani there. So, yeah, that are my thoughts initially, is that, yes, it looked like, you know, driving into the bush, but you've got to look past that and see that the potential there. And as you say, I think it's something like 5.8 million tonnes on JORC report, isn't it, for Lew and Sobey on the open pit. And that doesn't take into account the underground part of things.
Yeah. And then after Lew and Sobey, because we went back, we went quite early to Lew and Sobey first thing in the morning and then came back. What did I find in the local shopping centre that we did that afternoon?
Oh, you found some electric carts, didn't you? Which was interesting. Go carts, yeah. And the weirdest place was there was no track for them. Well, there was a track for them, but it wasn't your normal track. You know, your normal circuit. It was actually a multi-story car park with lots of pillars that you had to avoid. I think when you first booted your car, you realised that hitting the brake hard would actually result in a sort of 360-degree pirouette, didn't you?
Yeah, and you just stopped. That was good fun for 10 minutes or however long we did it. And then we basically prepared ourselves and we boarded the plane then for to Lusaka, where we got that evening. And we landed in Lusaka and met Tulai and Tony, who are the owners of Cooper Lemon, who you see on the RNSs that are doing the deals with Colin Bird in terms of the different licenses, all the Northwest licenses, Silver King, and a few others, I think.
Yeah. And then we headed off in the morning, didn't we, to Mumbwa, which is a sort of small town about three hours out of Lusaka. And then from there, we got some supplies and headed off to this guest house, had a night stay and a very early rise. And then, you cooked a nice braai, didn't you? You got some nice the sausage on there and that, and we had a really good meal, had a good chat with Tolly and Tony. They were great hosts. And then an early morning start, sunrise, off to Kikuyu and Silver King. Now, what were your thoughts when we stood at, I mean, obviously it's quite remote, isn't it? But what are your thoughts when we stood on top of Silver King looking down into that shaft?
Quite remote, I think is the understatement. It is remote, but there is electricity and there is processing close by because Zambia is the land of copper, you know? Yeah, it's a mine that's been there since 1890, I think it was, or 1880. Yeah. The copper was so rich that they were literally just digging in tunnels and digging it out.
Yeah, so at Silver King, Tony's actually been underground into that mine, hasn't he? You know, I think it was his baby for a long time, but... I think, was he saying he found very old whiskey bottles in there that he's obviously kept from like the late 1800s or something?
Yeah, he said they crumbled pretty much when he picked them up, but he's still got bits of them left. And there was paper down there and there was all sorts of things down in there. But Glencore came in there in the 90s, I think it was, and drilled a few more holes to extend the size of the pit, the potential pit. If you imagine sort of as a V-shaped ore body, and basically, they've just got to move out now to see how far it goes down, because they don't know, and also how wide it is. So there's a little bit more drilling just to extend that. And then, as he said, and I think you'll hear it on the voice notes, sort of 18 to 24 months, that should be in production. And, you know, the seams are 5% copper. And I think, I don't remember whether there's any gold, but there's 300 grams per ton of silver involved in Silver King. So yeah, very, very interesting. Yeah. And then we went on Nightmare Journey after that, I think, which was fun going over the rivers and stuff like that, because we had to get pontoons over the river twice. to go to the safari lodge.
And then you had a massage because your back was absolutely done in, didn't you? So that was good. Right. But and then we had a nice meal and then headed off early that morning. Actually, we had a really good chat around the fire, a fireside chat, which you'll hear. That's probably the longest chat on the podcast. It's about 20 minutes with Tolai and Tony there. So that I think you'll enjoy that chat and insights into Zambia. And then we headed off in the safari truck onto safari, saw some leopards and some other very interesting wildlife, wasn't it? The guide was great, wasn't he? Explaining about the birds and the monkeys and all the fowl. It was it. And also one thing which was mad was the fact that Tolai and Tony had installed this Starlink. So we actually had the ability to connect with family and upload and do go live on Facebook and actually show some of these this beautiful wildlife. It felt like probably from a safety perspective, they're probably one of the first safaris to actually have that functionality, which I guess it connects the guides with them and they know where everyone is at any one point in time. So from a safety perspective, it's a great function to have, isn't it?
Yeah, it was amazing. And has both positive and negative. I think the positive is, yes, you have this connectivity while you're in the wild. And the positive is that you have this connectivity while you're in the wild when you should be focusing on the wild, if you like. So, very interesting. And, the leopards that we saw and got pretty close to was pretty amazing. We saw elephants. We saw the big eagles that are the symbol of the Zambian flag, I think.
They're on the Kwacha, aren't they? They're on the notes, the eagles. If you pick up a Kwacha, you'll see it. But very interesting place. And anyone listening, as I say, that you'll get the details of the lodge. If anyone is, what would you say to someone who's thinking about visit? I've never been to Africa, wants to experience something. You know, Namibia for me was phenomenal. Zambia is very, very close. I mean, the safari, I probably enjoyed the safari more in Zambia than I did in Namibia, mainly because we had a guide and, we saw more, probably, the leopard was a really quite a rare sighting. But I just think it was great to be with others and experience that. But from a respite perspective, that lodge, the Mozi Lodge, what did you make of the facilities and being at one with nature?
Yeah, I think that says it all. You were at one with nature. I mean, you basically...
You had hippos outside your lodge, didn't you?
I felt like you were in the wild, okay? So if you want a really authentic experience, then I definitely recommend that one over Namibia because I think Etosha was very good, but Etosha was like a huge safari park also.
Yeah.
Whereas this is the wild. Like, this is the Wild West, basically. So, and the facilities and the staff and everything else were fantastic. We weren't even there 24 hours when you think about it. I think it was about 22 hours or something.
Yeah, it was a whirlwind. You'd want a good 4 or 5 days there to do it justice, maybe even longer, just to switch off and get into that, get into that funk and just relax, really. But it's great having that meal in the evening and looking out over that wooden kind of like off lodge of the main communal area, where you have literally the river Moji runs beneath you and you've got crocodiles swimming up and you've got hippos bathing in there and you can hear the noise that they're... I was walking up at about 4:30 a.m. or 5 a.m. It's just first light with the sound of a hippo right outside the lodge, And they say to you, don't come out your lodge until it's complete daylight because you just don't know what's there, really, and that's the beauty of it. So well worth a trip. If anyone's thinking of going, just book it. Fly down to South Africa, fly in to Johannesburg, and then get the flight up to Lusaka, and then you can get the you can either fly in from Lusaka directly to the Moji camp. They have a landing strip there, which isn't too far, and you can be collected, or you can take the sort of probably 6-hour journey from Lusaka up to the Moji lodge. So, well worth that. But I think we should at this point is really just say, hand over to the let everybody listen to the voice notes and, immerse themselves in and enjoy that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you to all those that assisted us, Colin Bird, for inviting us down there in the first place, for Hunter, the geologist, and for Tolai and Tony, who helped us out. And also John, the geologist who we met up in Andola as well. Very, very knowledgeable guy from Zimbabwe who's helping out on a lot of the projects up there. So, I think these projects are in safe hands.
Yeah, and how do you feel more as we go and learn more about these projects? How do you feel more about these companies knowing that you've seen them, these assets firsthand? Do you feel Do you feel like, you know, because a lot of you hear people saying, well, these don't even exist, these assets. But what would you say to people who are doubting their investments?
Buy some more shares. I just think the opportunity and the copper. I mean, I was looking at it again today. It's like 9850 or something per ton for the copper. I mean, there's copper in all of these. And I'm pretty sure there's copper that will be extracted in all of these. Whether Lewin Sobey is pushed forward and goes to the open pit and then possibly sold on, or is sold on as a project before then, I don't know. But, you know, there is opportunities awash. And that we haven't focused on the Northwest here in this because I think there's going to be more and more news coming out on that over the summer. And the other projects alone are pretty exciting, but those ones.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping
game changers.
I'm hoping that with this drill season getting underway shortly in the Northwest, that they just need one more drill season to prove up and actually get that strike and say, yeah, we've proven the geology. You know, we've got that Kamoa style, we've got the redox front, and we've got that, and we know it's going to be a commercially viable project. And you know what I mean, like prove it up and actually say this is the resource size. African Pioneer, I mean, I can't imagine it hanging around in the two-piece for very much longer after there's some sort of announcement. And hopefully we'll hear from First Quantum on their next quarterly report from their, you know, next 3 months of drilling. And let's hope we get some great results because, as you say, any one of those to strike will be a game changer for that whole of that Western Foreland.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at Extract and you look at Silver King. Even if you only took Silver King as its only asset and it progressed that asset with all the cash it's got, it should be worth 10 times what it's worth now, based on what could come out of Silver King. And this is a proven resource. This is not like pie in the sky. It's there. So it made me look at the things, and especially Extract, Galileo. And after what we saw in Namibia, African Pioneer is extremely exciting with Ongombo and what it's got in the Northwest. And it's deal with First Quantum.
Yeah. Okay. Well, have a listen to these the voice messages and interviews, and and if you want to feedback to us, email us at admin@sundayroast.net. Give us some feedback on it, and it's always good to hear from you. And thanks for listening.
Yeah. And if you've got any questions that we didn't cover here, stick them to us on email, or you know where we are on Telegram, and we'll do our best to answer.
And we're on the road again, heading up to Lewin Sobey. We've just driven past Mufulira, the Mufulira slag project, which was obviously announced in conjunction with IRH Holdings, the Abu Dhabi-backed investment fund. And what are your thoughts? I mean, that was a vast, vast size of tailings we just saw,
yeah,
wasn't it?
That's what, 350 million tons of pay dirt, if you like, or all sorts of different materials that have been processed over 50, 60 years from our Pani site in Mufulira. It's like huge, absolutely huge. And if we're talking 1% copper in that quantity, it's like, wow, it's going to be a hell of a lot of contained copper in that project.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking 350 million tons and that 1%, so you take a couple of noughts off, what do you get? A lot.
Yeah, and also, you know, you're looking at the Jubilee putting in four of their copper processing modules in there, aren't you? And
yeah.
Up to processing, I think it's 5,000 tons or something like that, isn't it, in
yeah.
total for each one?
I think it's basically the world's definition of a money pit.
Yeah.
You know, because ultimately it's waste. They're going to turn it into money and also probably clean up the project as well. As in, you know, that what is left and what is remained can be reused, if you like. So, yeah. And that's only the copper. Is there anything else in there that they don't know about yet? Or they do know, but they're not saying. So, very interesting project.
Yeah, and I think the plan from there is to take it to the Sable refinery, isn't it? 60% of it. And then the rest will go into local smelters.
Yeah, which there's a huge one, obviously, we've just seen actually in Mapan. So, you know, they're going to be able to smelt the stuff on site or close to site as well as benefit themselves by using the whole of Sable. So, yeah, and Sable's being extended, as we know, so it can take more over the next period of time, because they've now got a resource probably for the next, what, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, you know, to actually process all of that.
So we're standing now in the middle of Luensobi, which is a bloody big jungle. And we're standing on the place where they drilled hole 13. Which is in the middle of what will be the open pit,
yes,
in Luensobi. So originally there was 200 drill holes put into Luensobi in the 90s. And basically the 28 drill holes that were done by Galileo Resources in 2022 were basically to, one, confirm the resource, and secondly, to see if there was any extensions to the resource.
And also to confirm the historical drilling data as well, as a sort of quality control mechanism.
Yeah. So, yes, we are literally in the middle of not a jungle, but it's overgrown,
isn't it?
Very overgrown area. 700 metres to our left is Democratic Republic of Congo. And then the licence continues to go to my right towards, yes, Montepani and Mofalera, which is where we just came through, where we saw the Jubilee flag project. So, yeah. Yeah. Wow.
And here we are again on yet another flight, flying down from the northern copper belt in Ndola and Kitwe down to the capital, Lusaka. It's probably about 250 kilometres, but it takes a good 7-8 hours by car. The roads down between Kitwe and Lusaka are not brilliant, and you can imagine there's a lot of trucks on them loaded with copper and copper cathodes, which we saw on the way down. And it's a 20-minute flight, so much easier and quicker. So we'll report back from Lusaka. So we're now leaving Lusaka, overnight stay in Lusaka, heading out to Silver King and Kikuyu. Both of those are extract assets. And what are your thoughts? I mean, it's been about a year since we've been to Lusaka. We stayed at a slightly different part of town. What are your observations of the capital?
Yeah, we saw much more of Lusaka in the last hour as we've driven through it, so yeah.
Extremely busy, isn't it, at lunchtime with traffic?
Lots of poor people, you know, working for a living. And it's a third world country at the end of the day.
Yeah, and we're heading out on the M9. So if you want to pull up, if you pull up your maps, you'll see it's the Mumbwa Road, which heads all the way out to Kikuyu and Silver King, and then leads on to the Kafue National Park, which we're going to hopefully have a night in or a lodge. So we'll report back from the mines. So we've woken up this morning, a lovely sunrise. It's about 6 a.m. and we're at the district of Mumbwa, and we're basically in a guest house. It's in the middle of nowhere, really, isn't it? It can only be described as that. It's a sort of solar powered, basically off the grid, long dirt track out of Mumbwa. It's probably about an hour and a half out of Mumbwa itself, the town. And how are you feeling? Do you have a good night's sleep, Kev?
Yeah, slept okay, but should have slept for longer.
You're not a morning person, are you?
I'm not the morning person, so. Beautiful sunrise, but I could have dreamt that.
You could have dreamt it. Okay, well, the idea is we're heading out. You remember the announcement, there was option agreement, joint venture with Oval to earn a 70% interest in the Silver King copper deposit, covering an area of approximately 81.7 square kilometres in the Mumbwa district. So we're off to see Silver King this morning.
Yeah.
And then very close to that, I think it's within about 7 kilometres, is Kikuyu, the other announcement that was made for extract resources. So, how are you feeling about that? I mean, Silver King, I believe the name comes from the fact that there's a very good silver credit on the asset, up to something like 400 grams per tonne of silver. So it's that's not to be sniffed at, really.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of metal in the ground anyway, whatever type. I hope it shines today as we go and visit and I wake up.
So Tony, here we are at Silver King. Do you want to just tell us what we're looking at here down this area?
Okay, yeah. So this is the historic site, and we're looking at two historic shafts that were drilled in 1890. This mine worked from 1890, I think, to about 1905, and they shut down the operation because explorers were to move further north to the Copper Belt. Yeah, but this Silver King is a very interesting site. It's super gin, super grades, and high grades of silver contained per about 400 grams per every ton of copper. So where we're standing here, it's all in the middle, the epicenter of this pipe. In 2012, Mopani and Glencore punched some holes, drilled some holes up to about 150 meters. And there was good intersection, over 5% drill grade, and through a 50, 55, 56 meters of intersection. So Silver King, its extension, of course, extending west along strike, and potentially we can have about 10 million tons at about 5%.
So 500,000 tons of contained copper.
About 500,000 tons of contained.
And how does the geology here link to Kikuyu as well?
Yeah, it's very, very similar structure. It's a lot of these breccias that host this mineralization. So if we go to the other side of Kikuyu and Kitumba, yeah. Kitumba is drilled below 700 meters and massive ore body has been found there. So they've got a resource of confirmed resource of 27 to 30 million tons still open at depth. And the structure is the same, the strike is the same. And the distance from Kitumba to here is only about 7 kilometers in a straight line.
So you could truck the ore out of here.
We can truck the ore out, yeah. So we believe Silver King hasn't been drilled below 200. We believe that if we drill further with whatever has been intersected so far, if we drill further to 300-400, we're definitely going to improve the resource.
So we're standing here on historic mining site in terms of it's been going for 125 years or started 125 years. As you say, this is almost like a super pipe of copper, silver and who knows what else. What about mining licenses? Obviously, that's going to take forever. So how long are we talking about?
All right. Yeah. Mining license, we just got our approval. So we have a mining license now. And of course, we have the outside with the exploration license. So exploration will continue pulling out from the epicenter, and the mining license is in the middle. So as soon as we put everything together, production can easily start. And we'll figure out where we'll process, but production can start as soon as possible.
So what sort of time frames are you talking about in terms of being able to put this into obviously smaller production then? Which is obviously good news.
Yeah. Of course, we'll do a bit of geo works, just trying to test what and confirm what's already known. So we'll try and test that. So we're looking at about 18 to 24 months max, and we'll be in production.
Very good. It sounds like a bit of a company changer for Extract.
Indeed, yeah.
I don't know if you can hear this, but we've literally got the crackling of especially a fire pit, isn't it?
Mm.
And this puts a whole new meaning to a fireside chat under the stars. Can you hear that? Is it the cicadas in the background as well?
Mm-hmm.
So we're joined by Tolai Sikumba, CEO of Cooper Lemon Consultancy, and Tony Lucondi, President. Welcome both.
Thank you.
We should be saying thanks for welcoming us.
But... yeah, that's a good point, actually. Thanks for your amazing hospitality, I think, over the last couple of days would be the first thing we should start with. I mean, this is literally paradise, isn't it? Where we are now, under the stars, in what is the actual area? Is it the Kafue National Park, isn't it?
So exactly.
Tell us a little bit about this beautiful place we're in, please, Tolai.
So where you are now is we are sitting, I would say, right at the far north of the Kafue National Park in what we call our home, Moji Bush Camp. And it's right on the banks of the Moji River and Lufupa River. And this is our little piece of paradise. As an animal lover, conservationist, Tony and I put it together. And this is where we come to rest when we are not hustling and tussling with the wide world and really looking at God's majesty at its best.
What a contrast it is from the whole mining industry to have this respite to come to. So just tell us a bit about the background of Cooper Lemon and how it came about.
So Cooper Lemon, me and Tolai put put together Cooper Lemon as a consultancy unit, of course, because of I'm coming from a mining background and had a lot of challenges in dealing with a lot of mining houses and sorting legalities and stuff. And so I met Tolai 4 or 5 years ago, and where she was working at a certain law firm. Yeah, so a lot of other things happened, of course. And I persuaded her to join and join forces and let's create Cooper Lemon. Cooper Lemon, of course, is mostly a mining consulting firm. And we look at, of course, fixing mining problems and acquisitions and stuff. So we started off with a client or two. I think we have over 30 clients now, and all majors, big mining houses. And we've been working around that.
Just a question regarding Zambia in terms of, you know, you've been in the industry for quite a number of years now, Tony. How have you seen things change in the last, say, 5 years? Obviously, we've seen copper prices reach the two-year highs. It's just bust through the 10,000. But just how has the landscape changed in the last 5 years?
All right. Okay. You're right to put. I've been mining. I've been in the mining industry for just slightly over 20 years.
Yeah.
And the landscape has really, really changed. Of course, we've been moving from, as a country, from privatization, from national assets into private hands, the likes of Mopani's and KCM and the like. And with an introduction of a lot of private investors in exploration. So where I see Zambia in the next few 5 to 10 years is Zambia is getting back. Zambia is best destination for copper, cobalt and gold, of course. We're on the right track.
So Tony, you do yourself a bit of an injustice there, because you're actually second generation miner, because your father also mined in Zambia, obviously, before you. So how does your mind work in terms of the way the systems work in Zambia? You were talking earlier that there are four different systems. So, you know, is your mind underground?
Yes, of course. My dad's a mining engineer. He's 85 years now, and he's been working in the mining industry for over 40 years in the old ZCCM. ZCCM is old mining parastatal for this republic. So my dad worked there for over 40 years. I worked with my dad for 3-4 years, and of course I branched off to start my own mining ventures. I entered into small-scale mining in 2005 and been moving steadily up, entered into large-scale exploration. That's where we are now. We've got a lot of big partnerships, which is moving right, of course, in the right direction. What Kevin obviously is asking about is the four different types of systems or geology. Is of course the copper belt has been the world best copper geology in the world. And what it means by four types, we've got the copper belt style, that of course has the lower and upper Rhone. And then progressing further northwest, we've got near Solwezi, Kansanshi, we've got that style there, that is Kolwezi style. And then just after Solwezi, you've got Kalumbila style, of course, the low grade, massive bodies, but super low grade. Where we are further northwest, of course, the Western Foreland along the Lufilian Arc. And that's where you find the Kamoa style. And that's where we fall with other joint ventures like African Pioneer and Galileo and Extractor around there. So that is basically the four different types of mineralization that keep on changing as you're moving from the old historical traditional copper belt style. As you're progressing northwest, everything keeps on changing. We've got a lot of geological influence, of course, from the DRC. We have a border, just like our chairman keeps on saying, the borders, the DRC, Zambia and Angola, of course, were man-made, but that doesn't mean or make a border on mineralization. So we have Kamoa style pushing back onto the Lufilian Arc into Zambia northwest. As you probably everybody knows, Ivanhoe, of course, has moved into Angola's side, chasing on the same that pushes back into Zambia. So it makes the northwest province of Zambia as the world's best copper exploration destination.
Very good. Do you want to give us an idea of African Pioneer and First Quantum deal and what's your indication of what's going to be happening there?
I mean, the deal is in progress. I wouldn't go too deep in the technical and geology, but I think we're on the right track. We know we're sitting on both the Kalumbila style and Kolwezi style, right in the middle of the Western Foreland. So we're in the right rocks, we're in the right address, and FQM is busy doing what it's good at.
Okay, very good. I will ask Tolai, what has been the situation? Because obviously you guys as a company have organized yourselves well, but what has been the situation in terms of the legal side of things in Zambia, and what do you think is going to happen going forward?
The beauty of Zambia is it is one of those countries that have a very robust and reliable legal system, legislature, policy, and enforcement. And when it comes to the mining space, this has also been a very positive additive for investment coming into the country and also the local investors. For us as a company, what we've always wanted to do and what we are still actively pursuing is to bring in a new player on the market. From the time of privatization in the 1990s, when nationalization was put to the side and a lot of our mining assets came into private hands, they actually went into a lot of foreign private hands. So what we've been trying to work with is now bringing in the small and medium scale player to then have a seat around the proverbial table and be able to participate with real efficacy and develop small and medium scale licenses into mines and bring them into production. But the biggest challenge that we've had is that knowledge transfer, because most people feel when you go to the Ministry of Mines and apply for a license, that's all you need to know. Get your license and that's it. But with mining, there's a lot more that goes with it. And with your license attached to it, it's got several covenants that have got a financial tag to it. So the biggest challenge, which has also been our biggest motivation, is to get that kind of information across to our small-scale players to understand that it's more than just getting the license from the Ministry of Mines. It's now implementing your covenants, getting your pegging certificates, getting your drilling done, putting in your quarterly and annual reports, and making sure that you are compliant, because without compliance, you run the risk of losing that license, even though you do have a lot of prospectivity. But without it being in the right legal standing, it's very difficult to get investment. It's very difficult to maintain the said license. It's also very difficult to move from one stage of license holding, which is exploration, to mining, if you're not compliant. And in the last 5 years, we've at least established that kind of rapport with our clients to get them to understand through a lot of information sharing, but also engaging with the Ministry of Mines and helping officers understand the shortcomings that come with information. For example, there's a lot of tenements that are far away from Lusaka, which is the headquarters and the only office for the cadastre. So if you don't live in Lusaka, it's very difficult for you to know what your status is at the ministry on the portal. It's very difficult to get information across. So as Cooper Lemon, we also serve as a management platform. We also serve as the conduit for our license holders in Winilunga, which is 900-1,000 kilometers from Lusaka, those who are in Mansa, which is 2,000 kilometers away from Lusaka, to make sure that all the license holders are compliant, making sure the licenses are in good standing. And if there's any project going on and works are being done, means that the reports are coming in on time, they're being uploaded to the system and making sure that everything is moving as it should be. So on the legal front of things, I think Zambia is the place to be. The laws are in place, policies are in place, and there's adequate support that is there that just needs to be put in the right place for people to get access to it.
So it sounds very much like there seems to be a very, very big opportunity to put some of these small-scale and mid-scale miners together in a way that will allow them to work much more efficiently. What's your thoughts on that?
Absolutely, 100%. And the idea is to work on collaborative synergies. We all know once you put two heads are better than one, and the more you put together, the better you can get the job done. So we've had this very big gap from the times that we've had privatization, the big players coming on board. The smaller scale medium player has sort of taken a back seat when it comes to actual development of these licenses. But in the last 5 to 10 years, there's been an actual pushback from the small scale enterprise to say, we want to have a foot through the door. We want to participate. We want to be able to bring these licenses up to the standard where they're going to production, even if they're not at the scale of Mopani. But just in the recent past, we closed on a deal with, we put a deal together under Junction Mining for Kitumba Mine, which was locked away in disputes. But once the parties came together through our assistance and facilitation, we've now unlocked a 30 million ton mining asset that's coming now online in the next 12 to 24 months. And there's several other projects of that nature that are waiting for that opportunity. And the beauty of it is that we have that appetite from the small scale, medium scale player to up their game, meet the international business good practice standards, and then eventually get to a stage where they're able to access funding, they're able to access technical support, they're able to get to that conversation that now brings all of the licenses that they have into production.
The government, and especially the president, has been talking about 3 million tons of copper, contained copper per annum, in Zambia. I think within the next 5 years, when you haven't actually even reached 1 million tons yet, it seems a bit crazy to think you can treble your production that quickly. Just give us your idea of, you know, is it possible? And I don't doubt it's going to increase, but what do you think is going to happen?
3 million, yes, it's a big jump. Of course, we're just slightly below 1 million, but I'm sure, I mean, the president's vision is to have us moving to 3 million, and this can only be achieved by a lot of exploration work. So the country, the players should double their effort, and we need to have more rigs on the ground, more geologists on the ground to attain this. So this is a 5 to 10 year plan. I think it's attainable, and it will only work well if the government, of course, supports small scale operators, small deposits, and we have a few projects that are coming online. I think the Lumwana West, I'm not too sure about the tonnage, but it's reasonably sized. That's an expansion, basic expansion of the Lumwana West deposit. Just like Tolai put this talked about the Kitumba project. It's a 30 million ton open at depth and in strike, and then that could grow further when it's drilled further as when the mine is operational. The cobalt asset, the Mingomba asset, is a 350 million ton at 3.5%. That's awesome. And further extensions on the cobalt. The cobalt has got a lot of life, and if the right work is done, the next is 5 to 10 years. 3 million is attainable. It's a crazy number, but it is attainable. It's a good number for everybody to chase.
Just as a closing gambit, what would you say, both of you, to any investors who are listeners who are potentially thinking about investing in companies within Zambia, obviously the ones that are listed in the UK or even, you know, in the US? What would your sort of words be?
I would say Zambia is the right destination to come, especially if you're coming into the mining space. There's a lot of opportunities, both the traditional base metals as well as the new world metals that are coming onto to the market through demand. We have got the right robust system legally to protect all of the investment that's coming in. And also, if we have the right appetite from the investor, there is an abundant area for expansion, because Zambia has not been adequately explored. So that gives you a lot of room for growth, a lot of room to work with. So for anybody who's thinking of coming into Zambia, I would say that is the right decision to make. And it being geologically and politically stable, it's a wonderful place to be. Zambia is tranquil. You guys are here enjoying the beautiful Kafue National Park and all of nature's greatness. And just outside of this boundary are all these mines that you've visited today that show you that there's so much potential. Some of them are coming online in the next few 18 to 24 months, which is a very short time in a mine's life. And that gives you very clear indications for where you can put your money.
And I'm not going to end this podcast without letting you put a plug in for this place for Mozzie. So if anybody's listening and they fancy a nice safari somewhere in a fantastic location, beautiful, almost paradise, do you want to just give them the details of how they can access Mozzie?
You could definitely access the Mozzie Butch Camp. Just follow us on all of the social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We're under Shears on Safaris. Our handle is Mozzie Butch Camp. And you could also find us on our website, www.shearsonsafaris.com. And you will get to enjoy the most pristine piece of land in the Kafue National Park. We were privileged to get the last gem that they've been hiding for so long. And we just adore this place. And as you can see, Phil, it's nothing short of amazing.
And I'm sure Kev will attest to the food. Give him your review of the food we've just had, Kev, because you're good on that.
Yeah, the food was pretty good. Beautiful butternut squash soup to begin with. And then we had some beautiful ribs with also some pork, crispy belly pork, and beautifully done roasted vegetables. And then we had a custard with passion fruit thing to dessert. And it was delicious, yes. And the place is amazing, idyllic. Unfortunately, we're only here for less than 24 hours, but I'd like to stay here for 24 days, I think. And I suppose my point is what I've seen so far in the number of days that we've been here in Zambia, that Zambia really needs the small miners to do the 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 tons a year, and it needs hundreds of them, because that's the only way they're going to get to 3 million, because it's not going to happen with the major projects because they're not here yet. They're coming, I think, because of the exploration that's being put in, but they're not here yet. So if those targets need to be hit, that's what needs to be done. So yeah, that's my two penathon.
Well, we'll close by saying, Tolai and Tony, thanks very much, firstly, for your hospitality, but also for coming on and talking all things Zambia.
Thank you so much, Phil and Kev, for having us on and for being our guests. Thank you for braving the wilderness and being here with us tonight.
And this is where around the campfire.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming through. Thank
you. Kumbaya, kumbaya, my lord. Kumbaya. Reminds me of Boy Scouts camp, this.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.